While Bath Assembly Rooms in Somerset ready themselves for restoration, Inclusive Histories curator Tim Moore takes a trip back in time to multicultural Georgian Bath, when the Assembly Rooms were the country's most fashionable venue. It's read by Glenn McCready.
The year is 1789. In London, pens scratch out early petitions for the abolition of slavery. In the Caribbean, whips crack out over plantations. But in Bath, a lone 11-year-old lifts his violin, letting his music speak louder than either words or force. It's hard to say exactly when George Bridgetower first arrived in England with his violin, or quite what his heritage was. His father claimed to be an African prince, but it's now thought he was from Barbados. But one thing for certain is that George's first concert at Bath Assembly Rooms in December 1789 would change his life forever. Almost overnight, George became an instant celebrity, his musical genius making him the darling of Bath. Relishing the fame and success, George and his father promenaded daily through the city, greeting their fans while wearing costumes of turbans and foreign robes. After selling out a string of shows at the Assembly Rooms, George soon earned international fame, performing across Europe alongside such luminaries as Beethoven and Haydn. George was by no means the first black celebrity in the UK, but he was certainly the first to be launched to stardom by Bath Assembly Rooms, a Grade I listed building at the heart of the UNESCO World Heritage City of Bath in Somerset. Bath's hot springs had transformed the city from a Roman spa town to a Georgian wellness retreat, and the city's assembly rooms made it the most fashionable resort in the kingdom. In 18th and 19th century Britain, assembly rooms were popular social hubs, where people came together to mingle and enjoy music, dancing, conversation, and games. They were designed to impress, and often had elegant ballrooms, tea rooms, and card rooms. Bath Assembly Rooms, built between 1769 and 1771 by John Wood the Younger, remain one of the largest and most significant surviving examples in England. As Inclusive Histories curator at Bath Assembly Rooms and a person of colour myself, stories like George's fascinate me. During the 2 years that I've been working with the National Trust, one of my research focuses has been searching for evidence of the other people of colour connected with Georgian Bath. Located between Bristol and London, two of Britain's busiest port cities, Bath was an international city which welcomed visitors from around the world. So, were there many people of colour living in Georgian Bath? And did any of them attend assembly room balls? George was lauded when he visited the building, but he was clearly an exceptional individual. I wanted to understand more about the experience of other people of colour connected to Bath Assembly Rooms. Through my research, I've discovered a lively presence of people of colour in Georgian Bath. Thanks to the city's small size, its disproportionately wealthy residents, and its fashionable obsession with keeping black servants and companions as status symbols, Bath had one of the highest ratios of black to white people in the whole country. The treatment of servants and companions varied, but the more pampered, educated, and elegantly dressed they appeared to the world, the better they reflected on their patron. So many enjoyed a comfortable lifestyle. In 1777, one writer even complained about how much better the black servants of Bath were treated than their white contemporaries. Take, for example, the painting The Black Boy by Bath artist William Jones, circa 1764 to 82, which hangs in Bath's Victoria Art Gallery. The boy, thought to have been one of Bath's domestic workers of colour at the city's famous pump rooms, looks happy, healthy, and is dressed in sumptuous clothing. Far from whitewashing his subject, the artist seems to be celebrating the boy's otherness and difference. He sits for the portrait in almost exaggeratedly foreign clothing and carries a basket of tropical fruit. Yet servants weren't the only people of colour living and working in the city. As a fashionable spa town, Bath depended heavily on visitors and attracted lots of workers and residents from communities of colour. Many were previous soldiers or sailors who had gone on to have families. The British Army and Navy offered freedom for enslaved people who joined their cause, but then often discharged them after the cessation of conflict to find work of their own. This ever-growing black population finding new work in Britain included farmers, teachers, innkeepers, musicians, preachers, and many other professions. There were black churches, black pubs, and black businesses all across the country. In London, there were even black-only concerts and balls, as well as, reportedly, a black brothel. What about people in Bath? Many were day labourers, footmen, and chairmen, who carried passengers around in sedan chairs or pushed them in Bath chairs, a bit like modern-day taxi drivers. Others, such as the portraitist William Hamlet and his family, were ordinary residents of the city, working in artisanal trades or other mercantile professions. Some were exceedingly wealthy and mixed in the highest circles of society. Nathaniel Wells, for instance, was the son of a white plantation owner and a black enslaved worker. Sent to England to be educated as a gentleman, Wells was just 15 when he inherited his father's 3 sugar plantations in St. Kitts in the West Indies, along with a fortune equivalent to roughly £13 million today. He lived at 9 Park Street in Bath and loved going to assembly room balls until he and his wife could afford to host their own at their lavish family estates. There were women of colour in Bath too, though far fewer than men. This was not unusual. Like the rest of Britain, many free people of colour were men who had arrived through military discharge. As a result, interracial relationships between men of colour and white women became increasingly common. For instance, while Nathaniel Wells was noted to have sons who looked brown and dark like their father, observers noted that his daughter had fair skin like her mother. The experience of women of colour in the city seems to have been fairly similar to the experience of the white working women of the city, with most living quiet lives either supporting their families or employed in domestic service. George Bridgetower, meanwhile, was not the only black celebrity who visited the city. As a fashionable society hub, Bath attracted many contemporary famous celebrities of colour. Society figures like the abolitionists Ignatius Sancho and Alauda Equiano, as well as actor Ira Aldridge, all visited Bath during its heyday in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. These high-profile visitors would have witnessed Bath society at its most vibrant and also its most unruly. While the city was known for its refinement, its world-famous balls were not the elegant, ordered affairs that period dramas would have us believe. In reality, assemblies, as they were known, were hot, sweaty, smelly, and chaotic. People fought, quite literally, over space and food, and tempers could run so high that weapons were banned for fear of duels. In Jane Austen's novels, Northanger Abbey and Persuasion, both published in 1817, the Bath assemblies were mainly defined by being crowded and exceedingly hot. Novelist Tobias Smollett complained in 1771 that the smell arising from the perspiration of all these human bodies crowded together in a hot room and warmed with continual exercise contributed to compose a most intolerable stench, almost as bad as that of a jail or a hospital. On busy nights, there were over 1,200 visitors to the assembly room balls, and even in a city famous for its baths, the Georgians were not known for their standards of hygiene. Yet, for all the discomfort, Bath's assemblies remained hugely popular. When they opened, their affordability and open-door policy meant they attracted a diverse crowd, bringing together people from different backgrounds, including the city's population of people of colour. This was no accident. The designer of Bath Assembly Rooms, John Wood the Younger, intended them to be a place for events for all, a cultural melting pot of humanity from all walks of life. He shaped the building according to the ideas of his father, John Wood the Elder, who envisioned a completely new space in which rank could be laid aside and all degrees of people united in society with one another. As a consequence, anyone and everyone came to the new or upper assembly rooms when they opened. Everyone mixes in the rooms upon an equality, said the New Bath Guide in 1784. It might have been an equitable space, but it was no idyll. My research has also thrown up some more sobering finds, such as the links between Bath Assembly Rooms and the slave trade. The building itself was funded through subscription, a system similar to crowdfunding, where over 60 subscribers clubbed together to fund the construction of the rooms. The group included men and women of a wide range of ages, backgrounds, and social statuses, from working residents of the city to rich visiting aristocrats. At least 8 had connections to colonial endeavours in the East or West Indies, including 4 who were either first-hand owners of or gained direct profit from the labour or trade of enslaved workers on Caribbean plantations. One of these was Jane Austen's uncle, James Lee Perrot, who was directly involved in the management of Bath Assembly Rooms. The rooms became an abolitionist hub shortly after Lee Perrot's death. George Bridgetower's violin may have soared over the chaos of the ballroom, but over the years, a far more complex story has unfolded. From dazzling balls to heated debates, from exclusion to inclusion, Bath Assembly Rooms have witnessed it all. As the National Trust restores the building for a new generation, we must ensure that stories of music, power, resistance, and change are not just preserved, but heard. The grandeur, the contradictions, and the forgotten voices each have a place in the stories we all share.
Bath Assembly Rooms are closed while undergoing restoration to bring their history back to life. As well as installing a new, grand, Georgian-inspired modern staircase, we'll be making the building more accessible with new infrastructure and conserving exquisite collections such as the 10 original chandeliers. We'll also be reducing the carbon footprint of the building by installing a new electricity substation and air source heat pumps. We're expecting to reopen Bath Assembly Rooms in 2027, when we'll reveal exciting new ways for visitors to explore stories of Georgian social life. Please consider donating to help light up Bath Assembly Rooms once again. Visit nationaltrust.org.uk/assembly-rooms-project.